From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today we'll learn about the merger of two organizations that work with young people in Milwaukee, Running Rebels and We Got This. Then travel host John McGivern talks about the end of Around the Corner and his new show Main Streets. We'll learn what you should and shouldn't do in the garden this time of year.
Always have a purpose. We don't need to prune just because it's March or April or May. We need to prune because we need to manage the size or there are broken branches.
Then Milwaukee musician Brett Newsky talks about the new ways he's channeled his creativity during this pandemic.
You know, every other day I try to draw something, and that is that's a nice meditative exercise because you don't have to think too hard. You know, it's kind of like it's a little bit of an out-of-body thing where you're, you know, you can listen to tunes.
Lake Effect is next, but first, the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. For years, Andre Ellis and Victor Barnett have been working to help provide young Black boys with mentorship and opportunities in Milwaukee. Ellis is the founder of We Got This, an urban garden and mentor program in Milwaukee's 53206 neighborhood. Barnett is the founder and director of Running Rebels Community Organization, which helps high-risk kids involved in the juvenile court system who've been assigned court-ordered mentoring. Now, their organizations are joining forces. Lake Effect's Ben Binversi spoke with Andre Ellis, along with Dawn and Victor Barnett, about the group's merger. He starts by asking Ellis why now is the right time for these organizations to merge.
The right time for me is because common sense. I'm the only person over there for 9 years working in that garden, working with that community, alone basically other than the volunteers that would come. By joining forces with organizations such as Running Rebels, it's been around 40 years in this community doing committed work that has contributed greatly. It gives us greater capacity. It allows us to service a larger part of the community. Plus, Victor and I were often thinking about doing the same things. So why not come together?
I think for me, one of my themes has always been community unity and working together. So when this opportunity came, it was a blessing for me to have such a perfect fit of an organization to come together and kind of show that that's the way it should be done. I'm excited about getting the ball rolling to show others that some of those things that kept people from working together should not be in the way.
Another important thing is that Milwaukee's African-American community has been called negative in many areas, the worst in many areas. This will give a chance for us to display and show that we are not the worst. Why? Because we are here.
And I just want to add one thing to that. Another area that Milwaukee historically has fallen short in is organizations working together. It's been highly competitive. Coming together like this shows others that, hey, you know what, we can be stronger together, and it only makes sense. There's parts of having a nonprofit that can be tedious, and it can actually take an organization down if they don't have the capacity to be able to build on top of itself. So, you know, the accounting and HR and fundraising and all those areas, you know, when Andre said, you know, no, it's just me over there. Well, Andre obviously can't do all those things by himself. So to be able to tap into an organization that has that framework already so that Andre can do what he does best, and that's be in the garden with the young men.
Can you both talk about your approaches and kind of your understandings or models that you use for mentorship and effective change making in the community? What's the approach that you take with kids, and how will that change now that you're working together?
I think for me, everything has been built around the relationship that you can form with a young person. Because think about it, if you're asking a young person to consider things differently, have a different frame of mind, most of the time that's easier to be done when they have a relationship, a trust, and a belief in you as that adult that care about them. So I think sometimes we as adults just want to say, just do what I say, rather than we bond, we come together. I'm like your big brother or your big sister. now it's much easier for that young person. So I think it's a lot about that solid relationship that you can form.
And I don't think, you know, that our approach changes at all by coming together. I think it actually strengthens, you know, because another thing that we believe highly in is it's not just about your relationship with one person. It's about you having a network of support. You know, the adage of it takes a village. For us, that means, yeah, I'm connected to my primary mentor, but I have all these other positive adults, male and female, and an entity that, you know what, when times are rough or when I need additional support, I have all of that to tap into. So this merger only makes that stronger.
Andre, if you could you touch a little bit upon the success with Malik in regards to that example of a young person benefiting from both organizations coming together?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And right before I do that, Victor, I want to say, I think we both operate with a more hands-on approach. And because of the community that we serve lack resources in so many ways, they have so many requests. When I looked at all of the programming and all of the planning, the proper planning that the Running Rebels have done, they've got two wonderful facilities. They have a lot of other programs already. And oftentimes in this city, they don't recognize the Running Rebels for the efficient and effective corporation that they are, and the legacy that they're building, and how they're institutionalizing community service work. And so we do something hands-on. We have to get in their face, and we have to have resources, because these boys come from some real hardcore backgrounds. Many of them come from prison or criminal activity. Some of them are already got their hands on the trigger of a gun. We just want to show them how, if they have their hands in the soil, they can't put them on the trigger of a gun. Let me tell you about little Malik Taylor. Malik Taylor came to our program when he was approximately 11 years old. He snuck in. He's supposed to be 12. I call him little Obama because his ears flap out just like his too. But I think he has the mind to be the president as well. But little Malik just recently graduated from the 11th grade from North Division High School. That's amazing. In the 53206 zip code, he's enrolled now to go into the armed services, leaving in June. But Malik, when he aged out of our program, he went and joined right away with the Running Rebels. And what I noticed is it's like going from kindergarten to high school. Once he got over by the Running Rebels, he became more interested in his grades, which he was failing in a little bit. Thank God that we got this, and the Running Rebels is there to pick up the access, to grab our young men and young girls off of the streets, out of programs or wherever they're incomplete, and help them to complete themselves.
The past year, as we all know, has been rough, and especially for kids during the pandemic, not just with virtual learning, but all of the stress and trauma that comes with a pandemic. And I'm wondering how you both instill hope in your kids while respecting and acknowledging the seriousness and precariousness of their lives sometimes.
Our young people and adults, this is both. The times that we're living in right now, it's easy to kind of get down, give up. And I think having that relationship again, or somebody that you can turn to help uplift you. I have a group of guys that played basketball for me many years, and probably every 2-3 months, we get on the call, 20 young men talking and uplifting each other. I have a group of friends that we grew up together 50 years ago, being friends, and we talk every week on the phone to uplift each other. So I feel like if I need that uplifting, that hope instilled from, you know, my friends, I definitely know our young people need it to be able to bring that light at the end of the tunnel a little bit closer so that they feel hope.
And Ben, I like to say this here. I'm going to adopt Victor into this too. We may not be the birth dads, we're the earth dads.
That's a cool way to put it.
But here's how I draw young people. Love. A lot of them come from lack of love, and they can tell love from how your arms are open. They can tell love from the tone of voice. They can see it in your eyes. And if you have a no mess with them attitude, that you're going to be blessed by them attitude, they'll come in and they'll act right with their attitude. And so the thing about it during all of this COVID and all of this, even though we can't serve the capacity of audiences in a way, if one stopped by, if seven or 10 stopped by and they get that love, one can touch 10,000, 10,000 can touch 100,000.
Yeah, and for us, you know, because the in-person, you know, had to be reduced, we had to find a way to connect everybody in a larger way. So what we did was started holding, we called them weekly Zoom events. But in these events, it was intergenerational. So it was our staff and young people who were involved in the programming. And we made it a point to make sure that a part of that call, that 1 hour each week, we did a few things together. One, we always connected on a deeper level through discussion or, you know, being able to talk with one another. Two, we competed and had fun with one another. Three, we always informed. So there was always a part of it that was informative about what was going on in the world and resources available. We laughed together and we breathed intentionally. And we got up and we moved. We walked together for 3 minutes each time. You know, so it was a combination of all those things that I think helped keep us connected.
And could you imagine having 30 or 40 staff and 15, 20 young people on a Zoom call looking forward to next week to be able to come together like that? Something special.
That is, yeah. It's hard to create community on Zoom. So a lot of your work is about healing. And that is a word that a lot of people are starting to use now who maybe weren't before. I'm wondering what your vision for Milwaukee moving out of the pandemic is in terms of healing.
For me, the healing is taking our mind off of all of the negative things. Yes, there's racism. Yes, the COVID taking a lot of loved ones. We cannot take that away. But what we can add to it is more good food, better health, better opportunities to escape those scenes that you have in your life where you went to those things. I think that we need to start accentuating the positive. Was that Jiminy Cricket when we were kids that used to say that? Accentuate the positive. A lot of little black children are displayed negatively in the media. If they wake up in the morning and find out that they too can be scientists, they too can be police officers, they too can be mailmen, and ain't nothing wrong with being a garbage man. It's better than being a killer. So we want to just provide happier moments, take them away from the negative stuff that is happening, because they're just children. They shouldn't have to carry that burden so much. They should be preparing to go beyond the burden.
I think all of the pain and hurt that a lot of our young people are going through and dealing with, as Andre stated, if we're able to shine some light on some of the good things they're doing, that helps them inside. And I think that's one of the things we have to do is find a way to remove some of that hurt and pain inside of them. And that is the healing that you spoke about.
Yeah, and for me, I'm going to bring the feminine aspect to this.
Good.
because it's a balance, right? It's important to expose them to all the good stuff and have them focus on the good stuff and to create safe spaces to allow them to talk about anything that they're holding on to. You know, so when I think of healing, I think of that balance, that it's about the positivity and also recognizing what is it, what is that trauma inside of you? And oftentimes young people don't have that safe space where they feel like they can share without being judged, without, you know, somebody wanting to just fix the problem, but to just simply be able to express it and have people hold space for that. You know, so, you know, we have the ability to create, you know, those safe spaces so that healing can begin.
Dawn Barnett is the co-executive director of Running Rebels, and Victor Barnett is the founder and director of the organization. Andre Ellis is the founder of We Got This. They spoke to Lake Effect's Ben Benversi about the merger of their organizations. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll talk to Milwaukee musician Brett Newsky about how he's adapted his creative projects to the pace of pandemic life. But first, despite the cancellation of his show Around the Corner with John McGivern, the Milwaukee native is not done traveling. John McGivern will tell us all about his new project, Main Streets, in just a moment here on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. We'll be right back. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. When Around the Corner with John McGivern wasn't renewed by Milwaukee PBS, many people were surprised. During its 9 seasons, the show visited more than 100 communities throughout Wisconsin. Now, McGivern is turning his attention to a broader swath of the country with his new show, Main Streets. The show will focus on the Upper Midwest, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and, of course, Wisconsin. McGivern joins me now along with the producer and director of both Around the Corner and now Main Streets, Lois Maurer. Lois, John, thank you both so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Like a lot of people, I was really surprised to hear that Around the Corner with John McGivern was canceled. Did you see it as an opportunity to do something new, or did you find it disappointing?
Both. The fact that I was not renewed and that we had such popularity, not only in our market, but in markets all over the state and outside of our state as well. I was just surprised that the show wasn't supported like I thought it should have been. And the fact that it wasn't going to go on, it was time to come to terms with where I was in my career, where I was with what I wanted to do for the rest of, you know, of what I would call my career. And it came to, if Lois, who'd produced, created, directed Around the Corner, was going to stay at Milwaukee PBS, then I thought, well, I'll just continue doing stage work, corporate work, and my TV career is done. Until Lois and I got together and said, let's try something, let's continue. And hence, this came up, and we pitched it around and found a home. So is that about right, Lois?
It's definitely about right. But I just want to clarify, you know, the show didn't find support at Milwaukee PBS from the management, but it still had great support from viewers and sponsors and underwriters. So when the show wasn't renewed, we knew there was still life with John McGivern as a host of television because he is so well loved. If you know John, there was no sitting around. There was not going to be I'm going to wait for another year to see if this is going to, you know, come back. That just wasn't an option. And I have to tell you, we're very much alike. I wasn't going to sit around either because we know the positive stories all over that are waiting to be told, but not wanting to, quote, redo what we did or feel like we were having a second pass, we decided to take a new direction. It's kind of the same direction, but with a whole new footprint over the Midwest, Upper Midwest. And can I tell you, it's super exciting.
Yeah.
Right. So you have this new show, Main Streets. How does it differ from Around the Corner and build on the work that you did there?
You know, not only does it build geographically, but having done Around the Corner for 9 years, we also know what content it is that all of these communities offer. Yes, we're still going to cover all of the same great content that every community has, but it's going to be a slightly different tone. You know, there's some restrictions, to be flat out honest. There's restrictions on what we can do because we've done it before. So as I said to John, it's kind of like having kids. The firstborn is going to always be the one that comes to mind first until that secondborn finds their own personality. And that's what we're doing with this one. The secondborn is just as handsome and just as intelligent, but that secondborn's going to have to prove that it's just as good as the firstborn. Our goal is to separate these in the minds of our viewers, as well as in the minds of potential sponsors, because it's the next iteration, right? It's going past and beyond what we did.
Yeah. And the truth is that it's still going to be a travel show, and I still am going to be the host. So I think the feel of this is going to be very similar. You know, we're looking at how we're going to cover things like we did. You know, John Gerda was such an important piece to Around the Corner. John Gerda's not involved with Main Streets. My brother Michael, who did sports, is not involved with Main Streets. You know, the official who did the 30 seconds at the end, that's not part of our format. We're changing up the format. We're covering things in a different way. And it's really, you know, we were the creators of Around the Corner, and now Lois and I are the creators of this as well. So to get back into that seat and realize that we can do what we want. We can really go out there and create something that has a feeling of celebration, which is what we really thought we accomplished, celebrating community. We can still keep that, but to do it in a different format is very, very exciting. And to be given an opportunity like this, I mean, I'm telling you, I'm at an age where I can sit on the couch. I've done it for a year, okay? But I don't want to do that. And I wouldn't be doing another show if Lois and I weren't doing this again together. So we're thrilled.
So not the same team, but the same creator, certainly. So a similar kind of vibe. The focus, though, seems to be Main Streets. I actually grew up on a literally Main Street in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. What do you think is so important about the Main Street of a city or town?
I'll tell you where we came to that name. It's because we really have traveled around so much that every town, every neighborhood has a Main Street, even if it isn't called Main, right? We were in towns where we were like, oh, we're on Main Street. We turn around, oh, no, I guess it's called Water here. I guess it's called Front Street here. But they all have that same sense of this is where the community comes to gather. And as we said, the heartbeat seems to be loudest in a community on its Main Street. So we are definitely going off Main Street. Don't get me wrong. We still want to talk to employers and major, you know, organizations. And, you know, if the largest employer in any town is generally not on Main Street, and we're still going to go find them. We want to know what's made uniquely in that area. But in every episode we ever did and every one we will, you kind of start and end on Main Street. So we thought, why don't we nod directly to that? And every community will get its Main Street in the spotlight at the beginning and end, and now in the middle of every show.
You know, I live in downtown Milwaukee. I was raised 2.5 miles from here. And when I was a kid, my Main Street was Oakland Avenue. I was born on the east side. It was UWM neighborhood. My mom worked at UWM. Oakland Avenue between Linwood and Locust was where all the shops were. And I do a piece in my one-man show about my downtown, I called it. I was a newspaper delivery boy delivering the Milwaukee Journal back when there were two papers, and the afternoon paper that I delivered to all those businesses that were run by, you know, French, Italian, German, Polish, Irish, Jewish shopkeepers who I say in my one-man show that it gave me a glimpse into a world outside my downtown. It gave me a world outside Milwaukee, and they introduced me to all of this culture that I had no idea. And it was one block, my Main Street. So that was kind of us sitting around talking about what's next. That kind of was the springboard for what we're going to do.
So the focus this time is, of course, the upper Midwest, but you will be coming back to Wisconsin. What can we expect to hear about Wisconsin cities?
I'll say this. We will never leave Wisconsin. Wisconsin, we are born and bred. You know, I grew up in Milwaukee. John grew up in Milwaukee. And having done Around the Corner all those years, Wisconsin is in our DNA. So we are definitely not leaving Wisconsin ever. We look forward to exploring the rest of the area. There's 6 states that are involved in this show. It's going to be Wisconsin first and foremost, of course, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan. And it's the upper Midwest. And one of the things that's exciting about it, Joy, is we're hoping to find out what the Midwest sensibility is. You know what Wisconsin feels like. And we know that the Midwest is known as friendly. You know, we want to feel what that vibe is, if it's different in other states, or if there is a underlying thread that's going to carry us through the Main Streets of the upper Midwest.
And we decided that we would go 300 miles from my condo in Milwaukee, 300 mile radius. So, you know, we're doing Dubuque, Iowa, and it'll be interesting to see, because we found differences in community sizes. So if we were in Sheboygan Falls, it was different than Sheboygan, which was different than Watertown. You know, and size really kind of determined. So it'll be interesting. You know, I think one of the largest communities we're going to for our first season is Evanston, because I have friends and people in Evanston, and there's certainly stuff to do. So it'll be interesting to see what that feel will be like in a Chicago suburb compared to, you know, we're going to LeClaire, Iowa, to see what that feels like. So I think size really kind of determines sort of what it ends up feeling like for us.
Oh, sure. And Evanston is even going to be different than someplace like Naperville, also a suburb of Chicago.
That's not in our first season, just so you know. The other Illinois community is Galena, which is people, you know, you say Galena, everybody goes, oh, and I say then, oh, have you been there? No, but I've heard about it. So we thought we like to pick something that's familiar, that has some sort of reputation, even though people haven't been. And then we put our sort of experience into it. So when that 26 minutes, however many minutes of television we're going to be doing on commercial stations shows up, it's interesting to hear people's reaction. I've been there, I didn't know that. Or I've been there and the feeling was so much what you shared with us. So it's great.
Well, I think I speak for a lot of listeners when I say I'm excited to see the new series. And Lois, John, thank you both so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thanks, Joy.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Lois Maurer is the producer and director of Main Streets, the new travel show starring John McGivern. The show is being produced by Milwaukee-based Plum Media and will premiere in January of 2022. The weather has been beautiful and rainy, then a bit snowy and beautiful again, which is how you know it's springtime in Milwaukee. And with the snow mostly gone from our landscape, many of us are looking forward to getting back outside and into the garden. But you may not want to bring out the trowel just yet. Gardening expert and Lake Effect contributor Melinda Myers regularly brings us her horticultural tips and tricks. And she joins me now to talk about what we should and shouldn't do in the garden this time of year. Melinda, thank you so much for joining us once again here on Lake Effect.
My pleasure, Joy.
We're in this weird time of year where it seems like it's spring and then it's winter again and then it might be spring again. And a lot of us are thinking about our yards. What can we do right now to prepare for the impending spring?
You know, a few warm days sure gets us antsy, and patience is one of the important tools we need to engage. But there are some things you can do. One is if you take a walk through your landscape, you may notice some rabbit and vole damage. Voles are tiny meadow mice, and they feed on the bark of trees and shrubs, young ones especially. Rabbits were gnawing away, and with all the snow we had this winter and cold temperatures, the critters were hungry. And so as I walked through my yard, I saw some damage. So it's a good time to prune any broken or damaged branches. If you see white bark at the base of your plants, don't give up, just wait. Often the damage doesn't go all the way through, that those animals haven't eaten through the cambium, the system that takes water and nutrients from the roots up to the leaves. So that's kind of a wait and see. But broken branches, if you need to manage any size, if you need to do some rejuvenation pruning where maybe your lilac is 18 feet tall. Now, we typically wait till after flowering to do lilacs for Scythia and the spring bloomers, but you can prune them this time of year. You'll just eliminate some of the flowers. And my philosophy is if you are going to jumpstart and prune them before they flower, save a few of those branches to enjoy the blooms inside. But summer blooming shrubs like spirea, hydrangeas, you can do some pruning now to manage size, to take care of damage. Always have a purpose. We don't need to prune just because it's March or April or May. We need to prune because we need to manage the size, or there are broken branches, or, you know, red twig dogwoods. I love to, when I was teaching, I'd start my students on the red twig dogwoods because they're color coded. The old stems turn brown. And so you know to prune those back to the ground because the new growth is red. So doing that kind of pruning, you have fresh new growth. You'll have leaves from ground to tip of the stem. And those bright red branches to brighten the winter garden. So it's a good time to take an inventory and see what needs to be done from a pruning standpoint. And, you know, it's always good to wait till after your lilacs for Scythia bloom if you want to maximize your spring flower display.
I think a lot of people, the moment it gets warm, they go, well, I want to dig into the ground. I want to get my shovel out. I want to get everything kind of started. Is it okay to start digging in the ground?
You know, one of the key things with all the snow we had and it's melted and all that moisture in the ground, and so many people in southern and southeastern Wisconsin have heavy clay soil, we want to wait and work the soil when it's moist but not too wet. So grab a handful of soil, Gently squeeze. If it stays in a mud ball, it is too wet. It's time to go back. Gently give it a tap, and if it breaks into smaller pieces, it's moist and at the right moisture level to start digging. But if you're starting a new garden or a bed you haven't worked in before, always call Digger's Hotline. 3 days advance notice, business days in advance. Give them a call, 811, or file Digger's Hotline. You can file online, and they'll contact the underground utilities to come mark the location of those utilities. Because if you hit a gas electric line, it's dangerous. It could kill you. If you hit a line because it wasn't marked, because you didn't call them, you're financially responsible. And then, of course, there's the inconvenience you cause yourself and perhaps the whole block. And always look above as well, so you don't put any tall trees or trees that will eventually get tall under the overhead utilities as well.
So maybe a little early to start digging in the garden, but if you do, or if you plan to start something new, make sure you can dig there.
Exactly. And, you know, now's a great time to take a walk and go, oh, do I need to start a new garden? We've had so much snow and we go through periods of a lot of rain. Installing rain gardens is such a great idea, and that involves a lot of digging. And as you're thinking about where you're going to place that rain garden or that new flower bed, you know, you can adjust the design on paper easier than once you start digging. And that's your first step. You're right. Get those utilities marked so you can adjust as needed.
Now, as we're thinking about really, you know, starting back with our green thumbs, as it were, as we're thinking about making new plants, is it all right to start seeds right now?
Oh, this is a great time. So this time of year, we're thinking about starting our broccoli and cabbage and Brussels sprouts indoors. Those things will go out in the garden early in early May. We can even do some winter sowing, and I love this technique. Basically, you take milk jugs, cut some holes in the bottom, drill some holes in the bottom, cut it so you have about 4 inches in the bottom section, and then the top, and you use the handle area as a hinge, so you don't cut it all the way around. You fill the bottom with a potting mix, moisten it, plant your seeds, duct tape it shut, take the cap off and put it outside where it gets sunlight, and if it rains or snows, it gets that moisture. If we go through a dry spell or a snowless spell, hopefully snowless from now on, you may need to water occasionally, but not every day like you do when growing seeds indoors. And this is a good time to start seeds indoors too, the cool crops. Wait till early April to do your tomatoes and peppers. And then, you know, when we start getting to May, we're going to be able to, even mid-April, we can put out asparagus and rhubarb. And, you know, we're starting to get close to that season, lettuce and peas. And I like to start things in pots, like greens. And so when we have some nice days above freezing, you know, we had some nice warm days, put the pot out there, let it get the, you know, a little bit of warmth and some sunshine, back in shelter if the temperatures are going to drop. So you can jumpstart the season that way. You can also jumpstart the season using floating row covers. So once you do get your soil prepared, you cover it with these floating row covers for, say, a week to warm the soil, then put your plants out or your seeds out. What's nice about them is they let air, light, and water through, but trap the heat around the plants or the seedlings. Then that extra warmth gets them to sprout faster, grow faster, and then I'm going to be harvesting sooner. So, you know, once they're up and growing, things that need to be pollinated, like cucumbers and squash, we need to uncover. But it's a great way to jumpstart, get an early start, and then be harvesting sooner than the rest of the people on your block.
All right. Well, I think like a lot of people, I'm looking forward to getting back into the garden as we're heading towards spring. Melinda Myers, thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Melinda Myers is an expert in all things gardening and the author of many books on the topic, including The Midwest Gardener's Handbook and Small Space Gardening. If you'd like to learn more about creating rain gardens and finding the right plants for the job, Myers is hosting a webinar on the topic today at 6:30. You can find more information at WUWM.com. Coming up, Milwaukee musician Brett Newsky had been touring around the world for almost a decade, but the pandemic forced him to slow down, and he's finding comfort in other creative endeavors. We'll hear from him next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. In normal times, Lake Effect features a variety of in-studio performances from local musicians and artists. But of course, these are not normal times. Many live events have been canceled, which is why we've been featuring these artists in a series we call Pandemic Performers. Brett Newski is a musician based in Milwaukee. He spent much of the past decade traveling around the world, playing shows in unique and quirky venues. But the pandemic put a halt to the breakneck pace of touring. And for the past year, Newski has been nestled in his creative bunker here in Bayview. Lake Effect's Ben Benversi spoke with Newski to see how his creativity has changed since the beginning of the pandemic.
So how have you adjusted creatively to accommodate the pandemic? What was your thought when you kind of realized that concerts were going to be kaput for a while?
There was a sense of worry, but there was also a big sense of relief for me. I mean, I had been going 8 years nonstop, like probably playing 150 dates a year for 8 years. I hadn't really had an off weekend in 8 years. So I think my body and my mind was just very run down and just burning the candle at both ends. So the forced leisure, if you want to call it that, it became a really creative time. And I just got to the bottom of a lot of things I needed to do as far as working on myself and like exercising out my phobias and demons and like sitting with my own brain for a long time, which is a pretty hard thing to do. And once you get past that kind of initial phase of extreme discomfort of sitting with your own thoughts, I feel like you can really develop some skills in finding peace within your own head.
Mm. It's comforting to hear because I'm definitely still in the stage of discomfort and really, really dwelling. And I think I was putting it off for a while because I maybe dipped into it at the beginning of the pandemic and was like, no, not ready to go there. But it's good to hear that you have had time to heal a little bit.
Yeah, man. I mean, I guess maybe it's too easy of an analogy, but it's like, you know, it's like you kind of have to go to the mind gym, you know, like if you want to like not be squishy and kind of feel bad and lethargic with your body, you got to, you know, work out, go jog, go for a walk, get some vitamin D in the sun. It's pretty much the same with your brain. Like you exercise your brain. And when you start doing it, it's hard to get motivated to do. It feels boring. You hear the word meditation and you immediately just get bored. You're like, oh God, yeah, I don't want to do that. But then, you know, after the week of like struggle and like, I don't have 10 minutes, but then you do it. And then you build up this like little bits of strength and you're like, oh, now I have some tools to go to when I'm feeling like those rushes of dread or anxiety or depression in my head. Like I have a place I can go, like a peaceful place or an exercise I can do. And that becomes comforting and like a little bit addicting because you just feel better having that, you know?
Yeah. So other than turning inward and taking time to reflect and take care of yourself, how have you channeled your creativity during the pandemic?
I've been drawing a ton. I went down to the Blick art supplies shop and I bought a bunch of paint and Sharpie markers and weird sizes of different pencils and some canvases. So I've been, you know, every other day I try to draw something, and that is that's a nice meditative exercise because you don't have to think too hard. You know, it's kind of like it's a little bit of an out of body thing where you're, you know, you can listen to tunes. You know, I can put Weezer on the stereo in the background, and maybe that's not like a meditative form of music, but I'll put like old French cafe soundtrack on in the background and just paint on a canvas.
Hey, whatever music you want to draw to is fine. One thing I was doing for a while was I was getting really into cooking, and we would choose a meal and I would put on a soundtrack that fit the meal, whether it was like pizza or, you know, we're making shakshuka, put some Turkish funk on, and it was just like a little something, you know, to get in the mood.
That is a great idea.
So you have still been making music in addition to your other creative ventures. You started a podcast, and you've obviously been drawing, and you have a book coming out soon, and we'll talk about that. But as far as the music that you've continued to do during the pandemic, I know you had a virtual concert here or there, but you've also continued to make new songs inspired by the pandemic. Can you talk a little bit about What Are You Smoking, which is one of the songs that you came out with?
My buddy Scotty calls the pandemic the cosmic spanking that human beings needed. And maybe that's controversial, but it's probably in part true. It's like, I think everyone needed a bit of a wake-up call, and especially in America, feeling a bit like we're almost going at a pretty unsustainable pace of not only just like consuming an Amazon and buying and clicking and buying and clicking and buying, but also like emotionally. Like, I think there's like this illusion that being busy is really good, and if you're not super busy, you're not successful. And I don't want to be like the busy guy anymore. Like, that's I don't know if that ever felt good to me. And it is fun, you know, it's fun to hustle and do well and like work hard at your craft and get better at it. But at a certain point, it's crucial to your mental health to just start saying no to things that just make you absurdly busy. And it's kind of ironic, but in America, I do feel like leisure is hard work because it's hard to turn it off, you know, but leisure is critical. And as someone who's never done any leisure the past 8 years, just constantly going, I got to do this, I got to work, most of my favorite ideas come when I'm like intentionally doing leisure, when I have like 4 days off and I'm walking around 4 days, going to the walking trails and the beach. And, you know, you don't expect to do any work, but you get a pen and a paper, and all of a sudden you, at the end of the weekend, you have all these like ideas written down, and you're like, wow, I never would have come up with any of that stuff if I was like in work mode.
Yeah. All right, well, let's have a listen to What Are You Smoking by Brett Newsky.
I met an armchair doctor for recliner feet on an Ottoman Empire, giving advice just like everyone. I must assume he thinks I'm pretty dumb or deaf or destitute. My loot is better spent than saved, okay? My yard's greener, wife's dreamier, cookie cutter. I'm a quitter or a winner, I can't tell. Definitely going to hell. My ego must be kept in check, and it's about time that I asked, what are you on? What are you on? What are you smoking? How do you land on these conclusions? Why can't you see it's a joke for a dream? What are you on? What are you on?
That was a clip of What Are You Smoking? By Brett Newsky. So the music video for the song, playing music is hard enough as it is, but you decided to do it in a hamster wheel, one of those giant bubble balls, which
human hamster ball.
Yeah. Is like the perfect way to navigate this pandemic. Everyone just needs to put one of those on and we can all go to concerts and music festivals again. I don't know why this hasn't been picked up.
Well, here's where you're wrong, Ben. It's miserable to be inside the human hamster ball, and playing songs for people through that hamster ball, through the plastic. Like, it's hot. It was like over 100 degrees in there, and you only get 15 minutes of oxygen. So we had a production assistant on the film crew, and he set the timer right when I went in the ball. Like, I'm standing there like an idiot while they put like a leaf blower into the ball. They blow up the ball with me inside of it. They seal it. They're like, all right, you got 15 minutes of oxygen. Go run around Door County, play songs for people. And it was a great time. Like, we had a hell of a time. We were just drinking coffee and getting buzzed going up the peninsula of Door County, playing these weird little pop-up concerts. But yeah, a lot of people loved it, but plenty of people totally hated me, which was great for the video, you know?
Yeah, you're no stranger to playing music in places where it might not be desired.
Keep it weird.
On that note of playing music, from your vantage point, How has the musical landscape changed since the pandemic?
The musical landscape, to me, you know, the industry is toast as we know it. And, you know, I think that's okay. As someone who kind of has partially participated in the music industry, I've always kind of operated on the fringes of it. You know, like sometimes I'll tour with my own PA and like we throw shows in cemeteries and backyards and driveways and stuff some of the time. So having that on the back burner is now proving to be very a big relief.
Yeah.
But I think it's, you know, music and all kinds of media, it's now a quantity game. So you just have to be, it's not like the 90s where you could be a genius like twice in your career and have a career. You know, you have to be very good, very consistently, and you got to really stick with it. And I think the key to that is just being like excited about what you're doing and having fun doing it. And that's a cliche thing to say, but it is true, because the times where I've not been having fun, I feel like that radiates out to an audience. And, you know, I think they can pick up on that. And it's like, well, if you're there to have a good time and kind of make the party happen, that's a magnetic feeling. I know when I meet people just out in public and they're just like, they have a lightness about them and they're just kind of stoked about life rather than merely trying to survive it. That's such a magnetic energy. I get so pumped to be around people like that, you know?
It is toxic and contagious in the best way. That's something that I want to catch from other people.
Yeah, I mean, the world is, you know, we're coming out of some of the heaviest years, I think, of our lives in a meat suit, you know, walking around the planet. And now it's just time to lighten up a little bit. Obviously, we want to take care of the people that need help, but being a little bit more whimsical about living and taking a few things less seriously, I think, is going to feel really good.
Mm. So you're coming out with a book soon. Can you give us a little sneak preview of what's in the book?
Yeah, so probably like 3 years ago, I started making like dumb little drawings, kind of making fun of my own anxiety and depression. And much to my surprise, the response was actually really good. And people were like commenting on them and really digging them. And they're like, well, keep making more of these. So I kept making them just as like a mode of therapy in my free time to kind of goof around. And, you know, after about 3 years, I'm like, dang, I got like 250 or more drawings. I got to turn this into a book. So I'm whittling them down, and the book is called It's Hard to Be a Person. And the tagline is defeating anxiety, surviving the world, and having more fun. And it's basically drawings just like of hacks and tricks I've used over the years to like feel better in my brain. And, you know, I'm not a doctor or anything. I'm just a local man who gets trapped inside my head a lot. So I figure like this stuff took me way too long to figure out. If I can share it with other people and save them headaches, like that's awesome. To me, that's more useful than music in a lot of ways. Mm. So, you know, it's been a struggle to finish the book. It's just one of those things where it's like, you know, I've been making records for the past, you know, 15 years. So that's just a thing I kind of know how to do and I can just do it. But like the task of finishing a book, like, holy Lord, it's like the work of 15 albums in one creative piece, you know?
Wow.
So yeah, man, it'll be, I'm excited about it. And it'll just be a cool thing to have like at shows too.
Yeah.
You know,
that will definitely spice up the merch table for sure.
Yeah, totally.
Well, Brett Newsky, thank you for coming on the show and sharing some of your insights. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. It's an honor.
Brett Newsky is a musician based in Milwaukee, and he spoke with Lake Effect's Ben Benversi. His song, Pure Garbage, wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of the conversations today on Lake Effect, you can find all of our content as a podcast. Search for Lake Effect in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or really wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to hear our favorite interviews from the week, look for Lake Effect Spotlight. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll tell you about a board game called Districts and how it illuminates the issue of gerrymandering through play. Plus, we'll learn about the art and symbolism on headstones found at Milwaukee's Forest Home Cemetery. That's all tomorrow at 10 on Lake Effect, on listener-supported 89.7 WUWN, Milwaukee's NPR. Which is so much better.